CNN Radio, I'm Andrew Spencer. President Barack Obama has arrived.
To the security of Israel is
he's speaking to some of Israel's strongest supporters. CNN's Elise Labbitt reports some people at the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee event feel Mr. Obama has some explaining to do.
They're really going to be looking for President Obama to kind of clarify what he said the other day about those returning, that a Palestinian state should return to those 67 borders, which Prime Minister Netanyahu in the meeting the next day called indefensible.
What could be a shift in policy for Republicans in Washington, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell using slightly different language on Fox News Sunday.
You cannot get anywhere if you start raising tax rates.
When asked whether saying tax rates implied he'd be open to closing loopholes and cutting subsidies to generate more tax revenue, Senator McConnell deflected the question. The field of potential Republican presidential candidates is getting thinner. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels saying his family doesn't want him to run. Congressman Dick Armey isn't pleased with the decision.
Frankly, we're disappointed. Now, obviously, we have to start looking and I was just saying this morning, maybe it's time to start drafting Paul Ryan.
Army on CNN's State of the Union. American and European ambassadors to Yemen are now stuck inside of an embassy. CNN's Mohammed Jamjoon reports the building is now surrounded by gunmen.
It would seem like an armed threat against those envoys. I've spoken to other officials in Yemen saying they believe the situation will be diffused. They're concerned about it, but they think that it will pass, that something will happen. They will be allowed safe passage to the airport and back to their respective embassies.
The gunmen are upset about efforts by Arab mediators to ease President Ali Abdullah Saleh out of power. It's election day in Spain. The governing Socialist Party expected to take a hit at the polls over the tough economic austerity measures prompted by the country's budget crisis. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Now at the Home Depot, select Pergo laminate flooring is at a new lower price of just $177 a square foot, a price that's right down there at ground level, making it the best time to buy this stylish, durable, and easy-to-install flooring. And with a larger selection of Pergo than anyone else, we're lowering the cost of putting your foot down on quality. Thanks to select Pergo laminate flooring, just $177 a square foot. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. U.S. only. See store for details.
Here's another question from the Geico Savings Mailbag.
McCall from Rochester writes, what's your favorite hobby?
My favorite hobby is saving people money on their favorite hobbies. I quite enjoy connecting people who'd like to save money insuring their RVs, motorcycles, and ATVs through Geico.
That counts as a hobby? I thought that was your job.
Well, as the saying goes, love what you do and you won't work a day in your life.
Wow. If you're not working, that sure leaves a lot more time for camping and motorcycle riding.
Call Geico today for a free rate quote. Geico, saving people money on more than just car insurance.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis. A foodie born and bred, Nikki loves dining out, chatting up chefs, and insider industry buzz. David thinks a great meal is a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Foodie married Beast. And now they have the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking. From famous chefs, winemakers, and brewmasters to authors, farmers, and restaurant critics. It's Foodie and the Beast, and it's on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We got a studio full of
glasses
and food and famous chefs and everything. It's great. It's just unbelievable. And I want to remind you that while you're hearing this show live, you can see it on NBC4's Washington Nonstop next Friday night at 8:30 and again next Saturday. So mm-hmm. if you're curious about what actually goes on here
Saturday at noon.
Yeah, I meant that.
Yes, I know you did.
Then you can watch that. So, as I said, we've got a studio full. A little later on, Fabio Trabocchi mm-hmm. is going to be in with us. There's some people who think that Fabio means fabulous in Italian. It doesn't, but it's pretty close for a guy who had a legendary restaurant here called Maestro out in Tyson's Corner and is back now with his new Italian restaurant down in Penn Quarter called Fiola. And Brian McBride, another living legend, is in with us. He's the executive chef at Blue Duck Tavern.
That's right. He's going to be on with us. It's sort of like a Hyatt day here at Foodie and the Beast. We have the Grand Hyatt and the Park Hyatt here. Brian McBride, of course, is at the
and
Park
Kevin
Hyatt.
Kevin Villalobos is in, too.
So. Yes, he is. He's with the Grand Hyatt with Cure Bar and Bistro. He brought in tons of delicious food, and we're going to be talking to him about what they're doing at Cure. And Brian is going to be talking about what's going on at the Park Hyatt with Publican chef Brian Huston, who we actually had the pleasure of meeting when we were out in Chicago a couple of weeks
ago.
But
you started an event called Masters of Food and Wine, and we're going to be talking about that in a second. And
yep.
We're also joined by Pamela Doherty, who's the store manager at Robert Wiedemeyer's Butcher Block, and David Kirka, who's the sommelier at Bravo, and Bravo Tasting Room and the Butcher Block, right?
I work collectively in the wines and the butcher's block.
Okay. You're going to have to talk. We didn't get to do a meeting here because you guys got here by the skin of your teeth. So you're going to have to talk. You can lift up the mic, put it close to
get about 4 inches
face.
From the mic.
There you go.
So, guys, let's start about with a little bit about you and how you ended up working with Robert.
Well, the restaurant that I was at, Inox, closed very suddenly.
Matheson and Kryn, of course.
I worked with them, and it kind of one day we came in and it was closed.
I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah, it was a great place. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. So I had been talking to the guys down at Brasserie Beck, and I met Chef Wiedemeyer right after that, and I was able to come on board down at Brasserie Beck just as a floor manager. And then in January, the sommelier position became available at Bravo in Old Town, and Chef Wiedemeyer promoted me to that, which I was very grateful for. I live in Old Town, so it's a much better commute.
Absolutely.
Well, and Pamela, how did you get snared into Robert's web of restaurants?
Well, I've been a restaurant manager here in the area for about 8 years and was also looking to not have quite so much of a hospitality life, but still stay in it, and wanted to do something that was a little bit more along the lines of the wine and a little bit more toward the slow food movement, because that's what I'm really into, the organic and sustainable agricultural aspect of things as well. And so I met Selena Zellers, who was the previous manager there, and with Chef about a year ago, and had a great conversation, and was still at another job at that time. And then when I got ready to leave, it just happened to coincide with when Selena decided to make some changes
right
in her
right
life.
Right place, right time.
So there
you
go.
Well,
the
I
end.
See many things over there. What did you bring
what
us to try today?
What are you guys planning
today?
On doing for
Yummy
us?
Yummy things.
Yummy
okay.
thing.
Okay, yeah. Like, for example?
We have vermouth from Doulin, which is the only AOC-produced vermouth in France. Okay. It's absolutely delicious. It's
Can been... you, for those who don't know what AOC refers
AOC
to?
AOC is the Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, which is the essentially law-making body that determines what you can or cannot do with products in France, and it kind of has a whole legal structure. But it's not just wine. There's also cheese and food products. Blue Duck chickens are AOC certified, and many cheeses. This is the whole framework for...
perfect segue there. Yeah, keep going.
McBride has a thumbs up on it.
It's the basic framework that the whole European Union uses primarily for wine, but also for food products, just essentially to certify that the product on the label is the same that's in the bottle.
Okay, you brought three of those?
I brought three. Everyone is very familiar with sweet vermouth and dry vermouth, which Doulin makes, but they also make a Blanco, which is a sweet white vermouth. It has some very nice floral, fruity components. It actually has kind of like a Big League Chew pink bubblegum flavor, which
is
delicious.
So you're going to mix up cocktails with nuts.
Do you mix? Are you sipping these on their own, or are you mixing up cocktails?
They're great in cocktails, but they're also fantastic on their own as aperitifs. And this is kind of a new train of thought for the United States, where James Bond kind of ruined cocktails or martinis for us and said, you know, don't put any vermouth in there and give me a vodka martini. So this is kind of coming back and making real cocktails, but also just... they're great on their own. It's real vermouth, and it's drinks like a delicious wine.
So what are we doing? Are we trying them on their own?
We're going to try them on the rocks with some twists.
Excellent. Awesome. All right. Well, while do that, we're going to move to our next segment.
All right. Well, I want to ask Brian right off the bat, Brian McBride. And Brian Huston, are you on the phone? Brian?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Welcome to the show, and thank you for an amazing meal at Publican a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Well, it's our pleasure. A little early for you there on Sunday morning in Chicago?
Oh, I sound like this at 3 in the afternoon.
All right. Well, Brian McBride, let's start off with you because you started this event last year. Was the first year, am I right?
Right. I did this event last year, and then I'm doing it again this year. And obviously, Brian Houston is going to come down from Publican and join us. I also have a chef from Abattoir, Joshua Hopkins from Atlanta, coming. And I have Pierre Abadejo coming from California to join us as well.
Well, let's explain what the event is so people have an idea exactly what this event is.
What we do, what we're going to do at the Park Hyatt Washington is we bring together chefs that think the same, who support sustainable agriculture, you know, have a pretty happening restaurant in their native city. And we match them with winemakers from the United States. We're going to do wine dinner from Virginia. We have wine dinners from California. And we bring everybody together and just kind of have a good time.
Right.
You know?
Well, so Brian H., from the Publican in Chicago. Yeah. We have two Brians in studio. Tell us, for those who haven't had the opportunity to dine at the Publican like we have, can you tell people a little bit about it?
Sure. It's it's basically an American beer hall. Mm-hmm. The giant big beer selection. Sorry, my son is partying this morning.
It's all right. We got him. We understand.
I'll get him. Hang on 1 second.
Aww.
Hang on 1 second. But it is a big beer hall, and you know, we have, you know, over 100 beers, 12 on tap, a great list, and the food is pretty simply prepared. You know, a lot of pork driven. The main idea was beer, pork, and oysters, and then we kind of expanded.
Well, we had pork every. I mean, between the suckling pig and the pork, the spice.
I was gonna say we had beer, pork, and oysters. I think we met that.
That was some meal.
It was excellent. And so, how did you get roped into this event?
You know what? Like I said, through Paul Kahn, our chef owner, he tries to get out and about as much as he can, and just kind of spread the love a little bit. I have some friends in D.C., and the opportunity to come out there is great for me and my family, so I'm going to take advantage if I can.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, so while you're here, are you planning on dining around town a little bit, or are you just going to, like, participate in this event and see what it's all about?
You know what? We actually just this last Wednesday at our farmers markets, I think it was the food editor from the Washington Post.
Joe Yonan?
Book signing, yeah.
Yeah, Joe Yonan.
And he was talking about a couple places. I was asking him where I should go eat and what I should go do. But it seems like the event is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so I'm going to be pretty pretty tight.
You're not working that hard. You're only working on Thursday, Friday.
Well, one place you got to eat is the Blue Duck Tavern.
Right, exactly.
That was kind of the idea. I stay close to home. It's a working vacation for me.
Well, and, you know, Brian McBride, you know, you really, Blue Duck, when Blue Duck launched several years ago, you were really the first one locally to put your sourcing on the menu. I mean, now everybody's doing it. I mean, and it's great. You started a trend that, you know, is now the norm, and that's fantastic. How is it with an event like this and with a hotel restaurant your size? How are you able to work with these smaller vendors and have enough product?
We've built enough relationships over the years, and we primarily have to deal with a lot of co-ops now.
Mm-hmm.
We deal with a lot of co-ops like Pap Valley, which is about 35 farms, all Amish, and they can pretty much grow for us year-round. We have Tuscora Organic as well. We have, you know, Mennonite Creamery, and they're big enough to support us. And then what we have to do is we just have to change the menu a lot, and we have a chef's table where we can use a lot of different products from smaller farms. But even like the Fresh Link out of Virginia, they've gone big and have multiple farms so that they have a bigger supply for us.
Well, is the sourcing, you know, the local fresh sourcing thing creating kind of a resurgence of small farming?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. We're seeing a lot of good product from a lot of small farms and getting closer and closer. We even actually buy our rabbits from a gentleman that has a company called Grass Central in Potomac, Maryland.
Really? I mean, is there, because now everybody's into it. Is there resource poaching? Do you find that restaurants are trying to, you know, offer more for some product in order to essentially buy away a resource, or does that not happen?
No, it actually works. It actually works out better with the more people that buy from farms. It actually supports them, and actually they can get bigger, and actually it really helps the whole mission.
for more and more people to use them. More and more people go to the farmer's market, more chefs to use this product. It helps them to grow.
No, I don't want to influence you, but we have rabbits all over our front yard.
We do have rabbits all over our yard.
I had no idea there was some money in them. So
it depends on the price, but we can use this.
Okay. A buck a head?
I don't know if you want these rabbits. Although they are eating a lot of clover, which is a good thing, which is all over my grass. Now, Brian from Publican out in Chicago, when you come to town for this event, are there products that you really enjoy working with in Chicago that you're going to bring with you, or are you looking forward to hitting the farmers markets here and seeing what's available here?
I mean, if that's a possibility, I haven't talked to Brian about that, but that would actually be kind of fun. We usually just kind of swing in and try and do as little stress on the situation as possible. The more mm-hmm. I can bring, the easier it is for me. I was just going to comment on that. Working back in Chicago, we going to the farmer's market and dealing with the different farmers and stuff, that they love the hotel chefs, and they love if there's the chefs that are able to buy all of their product. It makes the day easier for them, I think.
I guess that's true.
Little guy like me who actually has a pretty decent-sized restaurant that comes up, and I said, where's all the spinach? And they're like, well, you know, the...
That Brian McBride?
Yeah.
That guy in Washington bought all of it.
It's just the size of the truck.
I think that would be a lot of fun to see what he has, and, you know, I'd be happy to talk to Brian some more, too, about what he's using and just to enhance any dish that we can. Because really, for me, it's all about making my job easier. And
what most chefs,
good product.
But what Brian's saying is what most chefs do is FedEx is their best friend.
And yeah.
So, they'll do the proteins.
They're not advertisers. No talking about FedEx.
They'll do the bigger items, and they'll ship it in, and then all the flourishes and all the local stuff that they add to their dishes.
Well, Brian H., if you wouldn't mind shipping in some of that suckling pig that we had in public.
I know. I want the cracklings. Those are my favorite.
I'd be happy with
Absolute
that.
Absolute favorite. All right. We have to take a quick break. Brian, do you mind hanging on the phone for just a couple more minutes?
Sure.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're talking about cracklings with Brian McBride and Brian Huston from Publican.
And Masters of Food and Wine.
Yep, we'll be back in just a sec.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life Agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hi, welcome back to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We've got Brian McBride in studio. Brian's the executive chef at the living legend Blue Duck Tavern here in Washington. And Brian Huston, the chef de cuisine at Publican, another living legend in Chicago. And Huston is joining McBride at the Masters of Food and Wine event at the Park Hyatt. Brian, we have a couple minutes left. Let's make sure everybody gets the details on that and how to get tickets.
Sure. The event is going to be on June 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And on the night of the 3rd, we have a dinner with Barbersville Vineyards, which is a local winery out of Virginia. And I'll be cooking a dinner for that. And it's limited to 30 people. We have about 5 or 6 slots left for that.
Okay.
On Friday night, Brian Huston will be cooking in Blue Duck Tavern in the main dining room.
Oh, fun.
And so availability for his event are going to be for two seatings, one at 5:30 and one at 8:30.
Now, so Brian...
Sign me up for that.
Brian, a publican, what are you doing? Like, what are you hoping to make that night? Like, have you already planned your menu or is this the last minute kind of
thing? Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. We have a lot of what we do at the publican is charcuterie driven. And so we're going to highlight one of our terrines. And I think going back to what you were saying before is probably accompany that with something that comes from the D.C. area. But mm-hmm. probably just a pork and foie gras terrine. And
that
I think
sounds terrible.
Oh, God.
I know.
That just sounds horrible.
It's typical chef. Not only did we talk about it, I already printed those menus.
Yeah, there
So I think the smart thing to do is to get a room at the Park Hyatt, eat, and then go up to your room, sleep it off, and start eating
again. And then start all
again.
Over again the next day?
Pretty much the thinking.
And the same night that Brian's cooking in Blue Dock, I'll actually be cooking a Camus wine dinner at the chef's table in the semi-private room.
Oh, wow. So how many people is that for?
That's going to be for 30 people as well.
So now, is the Camus winemaker coming to town?
Yes.
Wow, that's incredible.
So we're going to do that dinner with him. On Saturday night, myself, Pierre, and the chef from Abattoir in Atlanta, Joshua Hopkins, will be cooking on the patio. We're going to be doing like
outside.
A farm table dinner outside on the patio on Saturday night. And on Sunday, we're going out to the Barbersville restaurant.
But I was going
to
say, you're taking a field trip, right?
And we're going to go down there, and we're going to cook with the chef down there, and we're going to do a five-course meal for about 80 people.
That'll be great. So now, are you taking the people? Like, is there a bus going, or do people
shows up
there?
People are going to show up there.
Excellent. All right. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
And it's starving.
And if I can get any other information you want on mastersoffoodandwine.com,
mm-hmm. Okay,
we have
great.
A website that has all the information and the pricing.
Excellent. All right. Brian from Publican out in Chicago, we want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. We look forward to seeing you when you're here in 2 weeks.
Well, my son and I thank you.
No, you got to understand, Wolfgang Puck was on this show about a year and a half ago, and
his
2-year-old
running
was running around screaming, "I got no pants on." So,
yeah.
Trust me, this was mild. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you for joining us.
Brian McBride.
Thank you very much for having me.
We will see you at Masters of Food and Wine.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing those apple pies in.
Yeah.
They look delicious.
They'll disappear soon enough.
Absolutely.
Let's get back to David Kirk and Pamela Doherty. Guys, this is delicious. I'm not a hard liquor guy, but this has a nice soft taste to it.
It's not hard liquor.
I was
going to
say, it's not hard liquor. Yeah, it's vermouth.
No, but vermouth to me is, you know, if it's not beer and wine, it's hard.
Well, it's a fortified and aromatized wine, so it is kind of in the wine family.
What a wine.
Like a port?
It's not as fortified to that same level. It's,
okay.
It's about 15% alcohol, which port is typically 19 or 20% alcohol.
I don't even know what fortified means. What does that mean exactly?
Essentially, either partially during fermentation or after fermentation, you fortify the wine with a neutral grape spirit, i.e. unaged brandy. If you want the end product to be sweet, you fortify it when the fermentation has not completed, as mm-hmm. they do in port. So for port, essentially, about halfway through fermentation, they take the fermenting wine and put it in a container that has this unaged brandy in it, and the brandy ceases the fermentation because alcohol kills the yeast, and then it also stabilizes the wine. This style of making wine originated when we were still sailing ships around the world, and
it to last.
Exactly, wine would go bad, and you couldn't drink the water.
How did they figure this out? I mean,
okay.
Practice, I don't know.
History lesson,
no,
right?
But I mean, you know, doesn't it like blow your mind that people were able to, that somebody decided to experiment with this and they actually figured it out?
Well, they had spirits and they had wine, and I think that, you know.
The math kind of came too.
Spirits don't go bad, and wine will go bad if it's, put it in the elements for too long.
Right. All right, well, that makes sense. All right, so what are we going to try next?
Next, we're going to try the Blanc, which is the white vermouth that has some sweetness to it, and it's actually my favorite.
Okay, great. Excellent. All right, so while you're doing that, Brian McBride, I'm going to ask you to switch seats,
please. We'll switch seats with your compadre from the other Hyatt. Kevin Villalobos is the executive chef at Cure down at the Hyatt at, I want to do the address right,
1008 Street.
1008
Street. On the corner of 10th and H.
A excellent. big hotel. 890 rooms, is that right?
880 rooms.
880.
All right.
Take the other 10 and keep them. Why not? So let's do the 411 on you first. Where'd you come from?
Well,
aside from Texas.
I grew up in Texas, and I worked at several Hyatts there, and then I moved to Denver and opened a restaurant for the Hyatt there. Mm-hmm. And then I moved here to Washington, D.C., and went to the Capitol Hill Hyatt.
Okay.
And then I had the opportunity to open up Cure at the Grand Hyatt in Chinatown, so I took that opportunity. We get to write our own menus. We don't have any corporate standards when it comes to the food. We try to make it a freestanding style restaurant.
Is that tough to do?
Well, it was a little challenging, but tough. I don't know if it's tough, but it was a great experience, and it still is. So mm-hmm.
Well,
I enjoy it.
I read up. I was interested in the name because, of course, one of my favorite rock bands. But but beyond that, and you and I were talking about this before, you say that you use sort of colonial methods to cure your own. More than meat. You're curing wines. I mean,
What we had thought of, like everything is basically cured. I mean, you're curing wine in oak barrels. We're curing our salmon in salt. We're using butter fats. So I mean, when it came to cure, it was just one of the names that came up, and we tried to incorporate some of our menu items in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really kind of where we got our name.
And how do you do it? Is it all done in house?
Yeah, we do a lot in house. We buy a lot too locally. Not as much as Brian, obviously, but we try to keep what we can local.
It's not a competition.
It's always a competition.
So tell us a little bit about the menu and sort of the things. I mean, you brought in all this gorgeous food today. Some of the things that people can find in there.
Yeah, we've been open about 3 years, and we mm-hmm. started lunch about 3 months ago. So okay. We have 22 items on the menu for lunch. And you could pick any of those items to go on your plate. We have three price points. You can get a choice of three, four, or five. Price points are 12, 15, and 18.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're not that hungry, you could come in. You can get a three. If you're hungry, you can come in and you can get a five. And everything's made fresh. We're open Monday through Friday.
I'm just sort of curious, for a hotel restaurant that you just started doing lunch.
Well, we originally just wanted to do dinner. We have three outlets in our hotel, so we didn't really need to compete with what we already had. So,
mm-hmm.
but you know, we were doing so well for dinner. We figured, like, let's try lunch and see what's going to happen. So we started about 3 months ago, and everything's been great. So
that's terrific. You
know. Well, let's talk about having a restaurant in a hotel, because Brian McBride back here is another example of the very few examples of restaurants that have managed to develop a big local following. Most hotel restaurants are for hotel guests. And it's
well, that's
hard.
Not true anymore. I mean, I think that there was a time when that was the case, but I don't think that's true now.
Excuse me. I disagree. You can talk about West End Bistro or maybe Michelle, Blue Duck. I mean, there are a couple, you know, Bravo.
Right.
That's
hello.
True. But how many hotels?
Doesn't he sound like he knows what he's talking about?
But we're in a Kempton hotel.
I do know what I'm talking about, because how many hotels are there? Listen, there are some big convention hotels downtown, and they do not have destination restaurants.
Well, I think
restaurants
the problem
for the people
with the,
there.
You know, with the hotel restaurant bars, I know Kempton is a very F&B
You're good.
Hotel. So, but, you know, I think if they give the chef a chance to write his own menus and not have corporate standards, and I think that the hotel bars will do a lot better. I mean, we've obviously done pretty well, and Chef Bradley's done great, and like I said, the Kempton Properties have done well too. So, I mean, I think it just shows that, you know, if you give a little bit of freedom and it's not so structured, that I think everybody will do well, even hotel bars and restaurants. So,
what do you have sort of on the horizon for what you're going to do? What's new coming?
Well, we just started this lunch thing, so that's what we're focused on now. We have 22 items on the menu. We have we make a fresh sandwich every day. We call it the daily slice.
And what is the sandwich that you brought in that's
this
here?
This is our chicken, apple, and walnut salad sandwich. So
it's beautiful.
That's a standard. But like every day, just to keep the cooks and everybody excited, we just they make a new sandwich every day, depending on what they have locally, what we can source out.
Mm-hmm.
We just cut a big slice off every time somebody orders it. We also make a daily grilled cheese every day. Like, I guess Friday we had a croissant grilled cheese. We had a bagel grilled cheese the other day.
Just fun.
Any kind of cool breads we can get, locally cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun. But we're just going to focus on lunch right now. We've done good for dinner.
Uh-huh.
Lunch
and so,
we love.
Can you tell us a little bit about dinner? I mean, what are some of the things that people can find there for dinner?
Yeah, we have a few staples that we keep on there, like a Maryland blue crab pie we make that – we can probably never get rid of because people just throw a fit. We have a local.
Do you have that
pot
too?
Pie.
I have people throwing fits all the time. Okay.
So,
well, you must be married.
Right.
And it's a little. It's a little. It's actually two different styles because dinner is pretty much a la carte. It's large cast iron skillets, built for sharing. Try to keep as much local stuff as we can on it. And it's just a good country home style feeling.
Excellent. So.
Well, I think also, I mean, the restaurant has a nice feel too. And that's part of it. We were somewhere last night, no need to promote it. But
right.
Part of it is not just what comes in front of your, you know, your face.
It's the vibe.
It's the vibe in the place. And Cure's got a nice, you know, that's the other thing. There's not that institutional hotel restaurant feeling.
No, we really try to keep it away from that. Not that there's anything bad with it. It's just like we just wanted to, you know, build something that wasn't so standardized.
Or corporate. So, corporate. I mean, when you're in a hotel that size, it can be that way, don't you think?
It can. Luckily, they let me make my own menu, so I think it's a good thing.
And are you involved with, like, because I know Brian McBride at his Hyatt, the two different Hyatts. We have competing Hyatts.
We're not competing.
The Batlin Hyatts.
Are you involved with room service and all that?
No, actually, we do not do any of the room service.
Okay.
We're strictly our restaurant, and that's it.
That's fantastic.
So if I'm in a room and I want Cure to go?
Well, actually, you know, if you want Cure to go, you can come get it to go. But, you know, we have issues all the time. We're just like, guests come in, they go, no, we want that we had last night. And so we make it for them. I mean, we're not going to say no.
Right.
So.
Well, that's awfully nice of you. All right, we have to take a quick break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are sipping on vermouth, and it is delicious. And there's going to be more fun when we get back.
Rise and shine with Founding Farmers. Choose from farm fresh eggs, blueberry buckwheat pancakes, stuffed French toast, waffles made to order, an amazing array of side orders like thick cut bacon, fresh grilled sausage, yogurt parfaits, and house made jams and jellies with Intelligentsia coffees, tea salon teas, fresh hand squeezed juices, and eye opening libations. You've got a real breakfast. Founding Farmers, 1924 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. Open weekdays from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. for breakfast. See the menus and make reservations directly at wearefoundingfarmers.com.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We are drinking great stuff from Bravo, and we've got great guests in the studio. I want to go back to David Kirka and Pamela Doherty for a moment.
I want to talk about this vermouth, because this is something I would never even consider sipping.
I was going to talk about this
vermouth. I don't really care what you're trying to do.
Everyone can talk about it. It's delicious. It's super delicious.
It is. But is this something that a more educated person would order?
No, most even educated people don't necessarily know about this. It's kind of on the geek scale as far as wine goes.
Okay.
Especially the Blanc. I think anyone out there knows that sweet and dry vermouth is in existence. Maybe they don't like it, or maybe they don't understand what it is.
I mean, but I use it in cooking.
There you go. Right.
What's the difference?
The difference between sweet, dry, and the Blanc?
Yeah.
Well, Basically, the dry is a white wine that's fortified and aromatized, and then the sweet is a red wine that's fortified and aromatized. The Blanc is something that's unique to Doolin. Some other producers, Martini and Rossi, are kind of starting to take their lead and do a different product. Like Martini and Rossi has like a rosé vermouth that's kind of slightly sweet. But Doolin did it originally. They just left a little bit of residual sugar in the fermenting wine.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a proprietary blend of herbs that they use to flavor the wine. And so I couldn't really tell you exactly what's in it, but it's alpine herbs. It's from the Savoie region of France, which is central eastern France.
But is it made? Is it? I guess my question is, because I only think of vermouth as an accent, is it made to be sipped alone? Is that the point? Is that what they...
Tastes delicious by itself, doesn't it?
It does. No, it absolutely does. But I was just curious if originally it'd be an aperitif. The intention.
It'd be like an aperitif.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I think that this in particular, for this weather that we have, this, like I said, this is my absolute favorite. Just with a little orange twist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's perfect. It's refreshing. It's crisp. It's also a great way to start out your meal. You sit down at a restaurant and you don't know what bottle of wine you want or where, if you're going to start with champagne. Just have a little vermouth on the rocks while you're looking at the menu. It's perfect way to start.
Well, let me
evening.
Ask you something, because first of all, that shows how totally uninformed I am. No idea that vermouth was basically wine with, you know, sex appeal, more sex appeal. But Martini and Rossi make Campari, and that's called a digestivo. It's for, you know, to help get your system worked up. Does this essentially have the same function?
It's an aperitif. It gets your juices flowing. It's high in acidity, so it gets your saliva going,
mm-hmm.
Which is part of eating. Maybe it's not the pretty part of it, but it definitely...
Not when I'm eating.
Definitely aids your appetite.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Right now, just drinking this, like I'm ready for a nice meal. So,
there's tons of food here. We have tons of good food.
Right, we even have apple pie from Brian McBride. So
and whoopie pies, which I love.
We have whoopie pies.
Now, I see you have a lot of other things over there. Can you tell us what else you guys are going to introduce today?
Certainly. We have the Conchito. This is a wine from Portugal. The
mm-hmm.
grapes are grown in the Douro, which is the region that grapes are grown for the production of port. But this is a dry white wine.
Mm.
This, I think, represents the new Iberian Peninsula. I get this from a one-man Iberian Peninsula sourcing and distributing machine. His name is Jonas Gustafsson, and he sources wines only from Portugal and Spain and essentially searches out bodegas in Spain and Portugal and brings them to Northern Virginia and the D.C. area.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, we do see more and more Spanish wines, but we do not see a lot of wines from Portugal.
This wine's delicious. It's the primary grape is Ribagato, but it also has Codega del Reino,
mm-hmm.
Codega, and Vicino. So just off the wall varietals you've never heard of. It's got a little bit of French oak aging, gives it kind of a little bit of muscle on the mid palate. The soil of Douro is primarily granite, so you get this nice rocky minerality to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phenomenal, great in the summer, but it's good year round because it's just delicious. We've got a rosé, which is available in the Butcher's Block. This is from Shane Wines. He's one of the associate winemakers at Costa Brown, which produces high-scoring Pinot Noirs, and this is kind of his own little side project.
A beautiful color, that rosé.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It looks like spring.
Yeah, nice, nice strawberry, raspberry guy.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got a Grenache from Australia.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, while you get to pouring, we are going to what?
I was just thinking, the only other Portuguese wine I ever heard of, we called it Matus in college, but it was Mateus, which was about $1 a bottle, and it's what you bought when you wanted a girl to think you had class.
Boy, I'm really glad
it tasted like kerosene.
Well, they'll think you have class if you get the Conchito.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I need Nikki, I've got class.
Excellent. Thank
Finally.
God. Finally. All right. Brian, we were talking earlier with you about sourcing, and you were really, Blue Duck Tavern was really one of the first restaurants in the area to put where you were getting your product on the menus. What sort of started that idea with you, and how do you think the trend has evolved, you know, since you guys have opened several years ago?
For years and years and years, we always source product, and we source so much from Pennsylvania that actually when we shut down my old restaurant, Melrose, and we're going to open Blue Dock, I spent a lot of time driving around Pennsylvania and visiting farms and visiting people.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly we built up a network because we would be introduced to one set of farmers, they would introduce us to someone else, and we met a lot of interesting and somewhat strange and fun people that actually just, you know, are in Pennsylvania and grow product.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lady that runs a company called Crazy Chicks, and she just does eggs. And she picks them up from Amish farms. And, you know, when
I used to date a bunch of those.
They introduce us to someone that does maple syrup, and then someone that you know, I mean, does honey and flavors them, and then someone that does this and someone that does that. And so eventually we met enough people, you know, I mean, for that. And then we started the contract, you know, buying whole cows, you know, 12 a year, and buying whole pigs and having someone raise and grow them for us so they mm-hmm. would be delivered at certain times of the year. And it just keeps going and going and going until you have this huge network of suppliers that you can supply yourself with. And the marketing from that standpoint, you know, means a lot. The names of the farms, people mm-hmm. love it.
Of course. Well, I think, you know, listen, in the last 5 years, how many new farmers markets are there in the D.C. metro area? I mean, they just keep popping up every day. There's lots, and they're all good, and there's lots of good product and vendors there at them.
Well, but aside from produce and food, let's talk about the animals, because there's this whole big thing now. I mean, as much as I'm an animal lover, I love beef and
you're
I love
carnivore.
Pork, and I'm a carnivore, and I'm an omnivore. But how do you assure yourself and ensure for, you know, what you're telling your customers that, you know, that cow basically had a great life out in the pasture and was slaughtered, you know, humanely? And what is humane slaughtering? Is it halal or is it the, you know, the bolt? What is it?
Well, what we've found is that we have to visit a lot of the farms just so that we feel comfortable with them, that we know how their product.
Do they know you're coming, or are they surprised?
They invite you, and the farms that invite you in and let you walk around and see everything are the ones that have nothing to hide. So that's important to us. And the being written, animals being raised humanely and being slaughtered humanely, it is part of a natural process that's been, you know, going on in the world forever. And so what we like to do is we like to buy from people that use these practices, because it eliminates a lot of things. It eliminates, you know, a lot of the diseases that affect, you know, poultry, mm-hmm. livestock, lamb. And it's a very clean process.
Right, it's a tastier product at the end of the day, correct?
It is, because you're not using genetically, you know, engineered, you know, product. You're mm-hmm. not, you know, you're not using ones that have been fed, you know, hormones. You're not using medicines and things like that. You're using a very clean product that goes through a natural life cycle.
Let me ask you a question. Deepak Chopra, a million years ago, had in one of his books that when an animal is slaughtered, depending on how it's slaughtered, it affects, you know, it affects the quality and the taste of the beef and what goes uh-huh. into your body, because when they're terrified, their bodies produce hormones,
terror
hormones that essentially you're eating when you're eating that. Do you buy into that? Is that?
I do. You can actually see the difference in how, and we'll use a cow, for example, is slaughtered. You know, if it's in a relaxed state and is very comfortable, yes, it makes a big difference in whether it's been shocked.
Right.
And it does. They release a chemical into their body that changes the composition.
Well, and I also think it goes to, you know, certified humane really speaks to all that. Like, while the animal is alive, why shouldn't the animal be treated well and, you know, eat healthy and be treated healthy? And, you know, are you finding that more people, when they come to your restaurant, are asking educated questions?
Our customers are in Washington, D.C. are so educated.
Right.
They know what's going on and they know what they want. I attribute some of the success of Blue Duck Tavern to the fact that we provide a product that customers are very comfortable with mm-hmm. and that we can answer their questions. So yeah, I find that it's a huge plus.
Okay.
But the humane certification, the humane slaughter is very important.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. All right. We are going to go back to wines for a second. So you are also going to be making, David, this is you over there. You're going to be making us a soda.
David Kirkin, not David Nellis.
Right. You're going to be making us a soda today?
Well, we've got it made. It's in the soda siphon and ready to go. It's
okay.
Why would you make your own sodas? That's what is that again for fun or?
Yeah, it seemed like something fun to do.
But a lot of people are doing it. I mean, you're seeing a lot of house-made sodas at restaurants around the city.
Yeah, they're doing it at the W. They do it at our neighbors at the Majestic. They've been mm-hmm. doing it at the Majestic actually for quite a long time.
Quite a while.
So we just started doing it. We started out with a cucumber ginger,
uh-huh.
and now this is the new recipe. This is strawberry. It's fresh local strawberries from a co-op called Freshlink. And then we also have some tarragon and some white balsamic vinegar to add a little acidity,
yeah,
and it's sweetened with some
good
honey. So excellent. Strawberry, balsamic, tarragon.
And do you find when you make these house-made sodas in your restaurant, How? What's the response from people? How do do people order them? Do they think they're for kids? What's the?
They're definitely for adults. They're not as sweet as your typical, you know, strawberry crush soda. Mm-hmm. But they like them. It's fun. It's different. We promote these at the tasting room, which is a little bit more casual. So I think it's a more appropriate venue for handmade sodas.
Okay, so do you drop alcohol in there too, or do you?
Absolutely.
I was like, I thought he was going to say no.
What, are you stupid, buddy? What kind of interviewer are you?
All right, well, let's get a taste of that. And we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about restaurant openings happening in and around the D.C. metro area. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life Agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And if you've heard that phrase, jumping out of an airplane with an erector set and building a new plane on the way down, that's what we're doing because he was held up in traffic most of the show. But Fabio Trabocchi is here to say that he is one of America's best known and most inventive Italian chefs.
He's you blushing. Are. I can't believe you're blushing. Aww,
that's
come
so
on.
Sweet. Carissimo. Anyway, so.
More than blushing, I'm on fire.
And now he's back. You know, he had Maestro out at Tyson's Corner a couple of years ago, went away to New York for a little bit, and is back with Fiola down in Penn Quarter. So, Chef, welcome. I guess the first question is, you know, you were in New York getting rave reviews. Why come back to D.C.?
Why not? D.C. is home.
Is D.C. home? I mean, is that how you feel about D.C.?
I notice your accent. Well, it sounds like you're from here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can you? Yeah. You can go on and on and on and on. Well, I met my wife here. Mm-hmm. My kids are born here. It's home to me.
That's great. And so did you feel, because the space that Fiola has opened in was where you started here in D.C., right?
At first BJ? Job in the country.
Did it feel like kismet? When they offered the space to you?
I think life is really a full circle. But, you know, it was the first job in the country. I was 21 years old. Mm-hmm.
That was last year.
I wasn't
right.
born yet.
That was last year, but a couple of months extra after that. Mm-hmm. And I met my wife there. And we've been together ever since. So that made mm-hmm. sense to me.
And so when they brought you to the space, were you surprised? Or did you
I knew
were
the
you
space,
like...
every single corner right. of it. As it, the guy goes in front of me, see, we have to show you the kitchen. Oh, I know where the kitchen is. And we have to show you the storage. Yeah, that's the next door. Normally it doesn't work if you don't turn the knob of the door this way. That was the story.
So. All right, well, Nikki's been to Fiola a couple of mm-hmm. times. Unfortunately, I've been babysitting, so I haven't been there yet, but I'll be there. You know, you're so identified with the fine dining experience at Maestro. Fiola's a little different. Tell us about that. What can people expect now?
Fiola is not as fine dining as Maestro was. Maestro was a restaurant designed to be purely a fine dining restaurant. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that it's a special occasion restaurant that has, you know, certain characteristics that they are defining the role of fine dining and the definition of fine dining.
Well, it was a destination restaurant in Tyson's.
Well, you know,
it's probably the only destination.
The only destination restaurant at that time, I guess. We opened in 2001.
But it still is.
I left for New York in 2007, and I think we had, you know, we had certain things on the table before Maestro was even conceived that we wanted to achieve, and that was, you know, we live up to those original thoughts of what it's supposed to be. Fiola is much more approachable. Fiola hasn't closed the door to fine dining altogether because he's still adopting the same idea of using the best ingredients and using modern technique of cooking. But it makes much more consumer friendly because A is the total guest experience that is in charge of deciding what he wants to eat. You know, there's not an no one is imposing you to do a tasty menu unless you want to.
Of course.
You can have a glass of wine and a nice pasta at the bar and don't feel like, you know, you shouldn't go back until your next birthday. And that was the intention. To me, I wanted to make good food affordable and available for a larger audience that appreciate good food, that appreciate good ingredients, and he'd like to have all this into a nice setting. So what I'm trying to bring is somehow the finesse of a fine dining environment, but with an approachable menu that everyone can enjoy.
So for your fans and those that are completely devoted to your way of cooking, do you find some of them coming in and asking for things that you used to do? Because, I mean, as a chef, you evolve, and you probably don't want to do things you were doing 5 years
ago.
It's
like when rock stars go and they scream for their, you know, earlier hits.
And so how do you introduce the new things to your fans?
Well, you know, the menu that I did for Fiola, which is always evolving, and that's what I always did in any restaurant. I mean, we start with one menu, we look at ingredients, we look what's best in that area. We listen to our customer, what they like best and what they don't like. And that's why the menu, like a maestro, change every day. Fiola does the same. I think, back to your question, that some of the guests that we had at Maestro, they are still be able to find some of the dishes that they were kind of the trade of Maestro signature items. Yet also that is good for them because they can find other things that we never made there. And so it's interesting. A lot of them, they're asking for a tasting menu. We never say no. And we do a tasting menu because that's what they used to when they were a maestro, to sit down and enjoy a meal that, you know, would be a celebratory dinner. And that the characteristic of that you have a tasting menu, that you have more than one type of wine and so forth. So we do that too. But they enjoy it even more now because they're not tied up into the fact that I have to go in, but it has to be special. And, you know, and now they say, okay, we'll come back now for, you know, for lunch, or we come back for the patio seating, or we come back for the bar because...
Or for 10 desserts.
Or for 10 desserts.
You know, at 12 o'clock at night.
Like, I know some people, I don't know, this is amazing to me, 10 desserts at the bar. I mean, who's doing that?
Well, they pretend they're devouring their enemies here in town. So talk about some of the items specifically that are on the menu now that your the people that remember Maestro would have not seen.
Well, you know, I'm bringing back, first of all, my background is not only fine dining. And I was lucky enough to work as a chef. I think you need to have a complete portfolio of experience. You need to know fine dining. You need to know large volume restaurants. You need to know catering operations. And you need to know also casual dining. So I was exposed in different within different time to all of this. And as much as you have the Maestro lobster ravioli, which is still in the Fiola menu, a top seller, but you also have other dishes that are straightforward simplicity from Italy, untouched. Our paccheri, which is a slanted macaroni that come from Naples, is served with a traditional red sauce, if I can say that.
But not gravy.
It's red sauce. I don't call it red sauce, but I find that's the way to the people will understand what it is here. That is typical from the Roman recipe called coda alla vaccinara, which is an oxtail beef stew on tomatoes that I use to toast the pasta with fresh pecorino.
Andy, look at this. He lived in Bologna. I was in Florence. We're drooling, right? What did we find in the pasta? Was it pica?
Peachy.
Where did that come from? Because that I
peachy,
never seen
it can
before.
Be Tuscan, and it's a kind of a rough texture spaghetti. The good thing about that is they absorb the sauce very well.
Right.
And so they make, you know, extra...
like with the chingale.
Extra interesting, like the boar, the chingale and all that. So, you know, I think the balance of the menu of Fiola is that you have traditional recipes that you exactly know, or you have a precise idea of what you're going to get. And, and when you get in them, there is no surprise. If anything, that just evolved a little bit in presentation and all of those things. And you have some of the, you know, maestro's dishes that I think some people are expecting to see. And I think both worlds are winning in this way. Sort of like Maestro, we had a traditional section of the menu and a more contemporary and adventurous section of the menu. And it's nice to see that people get to try a little bit of both. You have, you know, the conservative diner that goes for the mozzarella and the prosciutto and to have the spaghetti with tomato. And then you have, and the next time he's going to come in, he's going to try the, you know, our other pasta with sea urchins and crab and he's going to go for our low poached wild cod with oysters and so forth. So I think, you know, you go for what is as a master's Italian, but then you come back for something that is more adventurous or vice versa.
Well, and let's just quickly, we don't have a ton of time. Let's talk about the space because you really transformed. Fiola was originally Biche, but most recently it was Le Perdu, which was, you know, a very formal dining room. And you guys tore it apart. So did you have a vision, you and your wife? I mean, you're doing it with Maria. Did the two of you have a vision of what you wanted it to look like? And I know you worked with Grizz from Grizz Forum.
I think Grizz and all together, we did, you know, you never know the way it's going to be until you see it. Even though we work months on it to define every single details from the way tables should look like to the way that walls should look like and what floors we're going to use. We had conversation over what floors we should have been installing for months. But that's always, you know, what it takes. And then ultimately you got the final product. The idea was that you having a comfortable setting. I think today luxury is about comfort, no more about formality. And that's what we wanted to achieve. That's why you have a stone wall that resembles somehow an house in Italy with those, you know, salvage windows that they're looking through the kitchen. But then you have wood wall covering and leather chairs for comfort. That was the idea. The idea was an open space, no more walls, no more enclosed windows and all that. So it's very bright at lunchtime, which I think makes everyone in the right mood for having lunch into a restaurant. And then it's much more cozier. I keep hearing the word sexy, not from me, but from our customers when they look at the restaurant.
I hear that from my wife all the time. What can I say?
Maybe we got
Take
the right
thing. Take it any way you can get
That's
it.
Right.
The two of you. No, it does have a great feel. And you have the lounge area up front, which
we
looks
wanted
like,
to have a bar. The bar that you can actually use as a bar. Not a bar that you can only use because you're waiting for your table. I want to have a bar where people can come and eat at the bar. Or can have you know,
it's big. It's a big bar.
It's a big bar. I think it was nice for us that, you know, that we spend some of the summers in Europe that we have a patio where, you know, people can dine outside. And and because of the street is also a quiet patio. So, you know, next to, you're not having lunch over a parking, or traffic and cars passing in front of you. And then we have a private dining room and a main dining room, which sets it a bit as a stage.
And your private dining room has a private entrance.
Completely.
Right,
guys, I hate to do this. Got to jump in. Chef, please make sure everybody knows where Fiola is down in Penn Quarter.
Fiola is on Indiana Avenue, and it's 601 Pennsylvania Avenue. The entrance is on Indiana.
It's the only nice
That's
thing.
That's so confusing about that. But it is on Indiana.
Indiana.
And there's outdoor dining as well, correct?
Yes. Beautiful patio.
Nice. All right. Well, Chef,
thank you so much.
Welcome back to Washington. Thanks for joining us. Guys, we got to rock and roll because we've got about a minute and a half. I just want to quickly thank our sponsors, Georgetown Bagelry, Neighborhood Restaurant Group, the folks at Founding Farmers and Farmers and Fishers, Dish, Notte Bianche, and Circle Bistro, Charles Schwartz and Son, and our newest sponsor, the Bethesda Central Farmers Market.
That's easy for you to say.
Right. I know.
Okay.
So,
can you guys give us the Bravo people? Come up to the mic. Let's give us one last shout out. Tell everybody, please, where you are and where they can find you all.
Bravo is at 1600 King Street. We're very close to the King Street Metro in Alexandria, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And we are part of the Lorien Kimpton Hotel. We've got Bravo Restaurant. We've got the Tasting Room. And then we've got the Butcher's Block. And lots of events going on, always updated on Facebook as well as our website. We've got the Full Circle Dinner coming up on the 26th. And then on June 11th, we've got a grilling demonstration.
And that's all we have time to tell.
Sorry, we ran out of time.
I just quickly want to thank our guests, Fabio Trabocchi, Brian McBride, Brian Huston of
Publican
in Chicago, Kevin Villanovos, I blew that, David Kirk and Pamela Doherty of Bravo. We will be off next week for Memorial Day. We'll have a best of show, and then we'll see you live the following week at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
Have a delicious week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Lifelong Wells Nutritional Hour with the phenomenal Cheryl Wells. This program will feature the fastest nutritional discoveries available, and our special guest will talk about natural healing and prevention methods in caring for your health. And now, here's Cheryl Wells.
Hello, everyone. How are we all doing out there? This is Cheryl Wells, and you're listening to the Lifelong Wells Nutrition Hour. I'm so excited about today's show because we're going to be talking about a revolutionary unique product on the market called BioVac.